The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Israel has accused the over 100 aid agencies who yesterday warned of mass starvation in Gaza of serving the propaganda of Hamas. It comes as yet more organizations have added to warnings of the dire conditions in Gaza, where another 10 have died of starvation in the past 24 hours. Today, President Trump's Middle East envoy will hold ceasefire talks with Qatar and Israel in Rome in an attempt to break the impasse over a ceasefire. Now, in a few moments, we're going to talk to a war photographer about the horrendous images we are seeing coming out of the enclave as starvation spreads. But first to Sally Hayden, Irish Times correspondent, who's currently just near the Gaza border. Sally, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Where exactly are you, Sally, and what can you see?
So I'm in a place called Sderot. I'm sorry, I need to apologize. This might be a slightly chaotic interview because I'm looking at Gaza right now. But I'm in what we've been told is a closed military zone. So I'm just walking away again. We were only allowed to stay like a minute or two. And yeah, I think I was there for 1 minute. I saw smoke rising from four different locations. I'm not in Gaza, I should specify. I'm like about 2 kilometers away. Or a kilometer away, but I saw smoke rising from four different places. I've heard multiple bombs going off just in that period of time, gunfire as well. And you can see the devastation. Honestly, it's quite shocking. You can probably hear it in my voice.
So you can actually see how the enclave has been pretty much destroyed from that vantage point.
I mean, you can't see everything, but you can see like a bit. And yeah, like from what I could see, yeah, total devastation.
And also the ordnance is still going off, so the attacks are continuing. Now, what have you been hearing from inside Gaza?
Like, literally 1 minute and multiple bombs. So like,
What are you hearing from inside Gaza? You've got contacts within the enclave. What are they telling you?
I have contacts. It's extreme, you know, I'm sure people are following it, but starvation, horror, you know, people are desperate. They've lost their energy, just calling for aid. I've been in the West Bank and East Jerusalem for more than 3 weeks now, and just talking to Palestinians here as well, and Palestinians who have family members in Gaza. There's just complete, you know, yeah, people are devastated, hopeless. They've lost faith in the international community. They just can't believe that this is being allowed to happen.
Now, you spent time in the West Bank, you said, the last 3 weeks. What are conditions like there? I mean, hunger is not a feature there, but certainly Israeli oppression is.
Yes, I mean, and I should say, I probably won't sum up everything very well, so people can also read reports in the Irish Times, but occupation is very real, you know. There's kind of constant raids, settler violence, checkpoints. Yesterday I was in Tulkaram, where I'm sure people know earlier this year there was a military offensive in the north of West Bank, and more than or around 50,000 people were displaced. And I saw a camp there that had been pretty much completely destroyed, Nor Shams, and met people who were forced to leave their homes and haven't been allowed back and won't be allowed back because the homes are being demolished. So there is displacement happening in the West Bank too. People are very worried that you know, attention could turn to them, that they could become the next Gaza. They really feel like ethnic cleansing is in process, and that, you know, this is the, I don't know, plan for them effectively, or there's efforts at least to force them out. First, to force them into population centers like cities, what are known as Area A, and then eventually, I guess, to force them out.
Now, you've also spoken to the Israeli settlers who have illegally taken property in the West Bank. What is their take on all of this? Why are they there? What's their justification?
Yeah, I should. And I just want to say, like, sorry again if I sound flustered, but that was my first time seeing Gaza from a distance. And I'm leaving today, and I just thought it was worth. I had heard that you can go to a particular place and try and see it. And I just thought, you know, it's worth trying to see what I can. Obviously, as journalists, we can't enter, you know, we've been blocked from entering for nearly 2 years now. And so yeah, it's shocking that you can go so close and not enter. But yeah, you're right. I was interviewing settlers. Generally, to be honest, they were saying, so I'm sure people know what's happening in the West Bank. The number of settlers in the West Bank and East Jerusalem has increased from around 250,000, I think, in the early 90s to 700,000 or more now. And yeah, basically what they were saying is they believe that this is their biblical right to be in this land. You know, I think maybe people don't understand about the settler movement. It's quite a deliberate thing. You know, it's quite a tactical thing that people are, you know, they're doing this in a way that is to claim more land, if that makes sense.
So they maintain these are biblical lands given to them by God, and that's their entitlement. Nothing to do with any deals that were done going back to the Balfour Agreement and the various wars that have happened in the meantime, and the Nakba in 1948, and UN resolutions. That means nothing to them. This is all about biblical imprimatur from God.
I mean, biblical, and then they'll say also security-wise, like they feel like they need to guarantee their security, and they see the more settlements there are, the safer they are. That's what they would say. And, you know, it's interesting also to note, like the settlers that I spoke to, multiple of them, either them or their husbands, have also been in Gaza, fighting in Gaza. You know, these things are interlinked. It's not like one is happening in one place and one is happening in another place. Like, and they were supportive of what is happening in Gaza as well. They also see that as something that they're doing for their security.
Now, the Israeli parliament yesterday voted symbolically to annex the West Bank entirely, which is, of course, completely illegal under international law. What difference does that make? Is it truly just symbolic?
Well, I mean, a lot of the Palestinians that I've spoken to and Israelis as well over the last few weeks have said that effectively the West Bank is already annexed. So they don't see this. You know, Israel has huge control there. They control totally what's known as Area C, which is the majority. But even in an area called, or like parts that are called Area A, where the Palestinian Authority is meant to be in charge, Israel can carry out raids. You know, I was in Nablus on 2 days ago, I think, and Israeli military raided a hospital there and went in and seized a person from the hospital. And yeah, generally, they are like active in the areas, even the areas that are, you know, technically meant to be totally under Palestinian control. And not only that, but there's, you know, checkpoints, gates, there's huge controls even trying to leave those areas. People there, they say Israel controls the electricity, the water, you know, that they feel that they could be locked in at any moment. Some Palestinians I spoke to, one of them, they described it like being in a cage. It was like, we feel now that we are in a cage, you know, like even towns, cities, they've got military, you know, gates around them that are guarded by armed Israeli soldiers. So it's like, it's called the West Bank, but like different parts are all separated from each other, if that makes sense.
Now, what is opinion like in Israel itself? I mean, there was muted reaction to the bombing and the killing by the military, by the IDF in Gaza. However, the international noise is about the enforced starvation by the Israeli administration. It must be getting through because of the international reportage, and also because of the number of NGOs, over 100 yesterday, condemning Israel for what they were doing. Is that having any traction at all with the general Israeli population?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I haven't spent much time, because I've been in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, I haven't spent much time talking to Israelis generally. But I've spoken to the settlers, and I've spoken to also Israeli activists who are really upset by what's happening. The ones that I've spoken to. And one thing that I did think was noticed this week, the British Medical Association made a move to speak out against what's happening. And I think that because it was coming from the UK, who are kind of seen as an ally, that potentially has made some kind of impact. And I think there were protests this week in Tel Aviv, from what I know. But yeah, I don't know. I can't speak for all Israelis, because I haven't really been reporting so much there.
Finally, Sally, I should ask you about the prospects for a ceasefire. It was reported yesterday that what had been put forward was agreed to by Israel, and Hamas had sent some sort of a document in reply. What is your feeling about what might unfold?
Yeah, I mean, as a journalist, I really don't like making predictions at all. I think it's almost 2 years now, and this is just devastating that this has lasted for so long. I'm speaking to people here who are just devastated. And I don't know, like, internal Israeli politics, people are saying maybe Netanyahu is waiting for the summer recess, because it might be easier for him to have a ceasefire. Like, those domestic political things seem very far away from the fact that people are dying now, every day. They were already, but like, it's really seems like, I was talking to an aid worker in Gaza yesterday. She said this feels like what she described as end game now. I don't know what we can even say about that.
Sally, thank you very much for joining us on the line. Sally Hayden of the Irish Times. Now, Sally, the main thing for you is to stay safe.
Yeah, thank you.
And obviously, as we can hear from Sally there, the emotion of just overlooking Gaza, where the images that we're seeing are becoming more and more shocking, with the visuals of starving children populating our television screens and our news feeds. But how important is it that we see these images coming out of the besieged enclave and war photography in general? We're joined by Lindsay Addario, award-winning photojournalist and author of the memoir It's What I Do, as she's been to many conflict zones across the world since 9/11. Lindsay, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I suppose people like you just simply cannot get access to Gaza, so we are depending on, if you like, indigenous journalists there and even citizen journalist photography for the images we're seeing.
Yeah, correct. This is one of the first times or one of a handful of times in history where there has been a total media blackout for foreign media entering Gaza or any democratic place. I mean, I think, Israel has banned all journalists from entering, all international press. And so it's incredibly frustrating to not be able to report on what's happening there. And we are totally dependent on Palestinian journalists who have done a heroic job of documenting not only the attacks against, the people around them, but their own relatives being killed, their own colleagues being killed. According to the Committee to Protect Journalists, 186 journalists and media workers have been killed across Gaza, the West Bank, Israel, and Lebanon, but 178 of them are Palestinian. And so that's just extraordinary.
The difficulty then is, if no international independent journalists are allowed in, and what we get is the work of Palestinian photojournalists and indeed from ordinary Palestinians who are chronicling the death of their loved ones, the destruction of their homes, and we take this as being an accurate chronicle of what's going on, the Israelis immediately say, you're believing Hamas propaganda. You're becoming dupes of Hamas.
Well, I mean, the quick answer is, well, then let in the international media, obviously. I mean, the question is, why have they not allowed international media in? What are they trying to hide? I think the second answer is, it is clear that, first of all, many of the journalists who have been working and providing us with these images are journalists who have been career journalists and documenting events for years. And they themselves, AFP, the Agence France Press have put out a statement the other day saying their own journalists are starving to death. They are scared that their own journalists will not be able to continue working. And so I think a lot of these are reputable journalists. And if it is citizen journalists, people taking photographs around them, the reality is this is also very important because they are documenting starvation. They are documenting attacks. They are not doctored images. So I think at this point, this is what we have.
And we know that at the time of the October the 7th atrocity as orchestrated by Hamas, that we saw all the imagery of the Israelis who had been taken. Some of them, we saw refugees actually, or sorry, abductees being removed by the militants. We saw all of that, and that was, I suppose, necessary and important that we see what had been done to Israel.
Exactly.
But then on the other hand, we cannot see the other side of what Israel is doing to Gaza.
Exactly. Those images from October 7th were incredibly important in documenting the atrocities against Israelis. And so the fact is that photography and war photography and documentation of war crimes and documentation of what is happening to civilians is important on both sides. It doesn't matter. We need these images. We need them as proof. We need them as testimony. We need them to stop the war and to create a ceasefire, because it is not acceptable under any conditions that there's mass starvation, man-made mass starvation going on in a place where there's food on the other side of the border. You know, this is not acceptable. And so, you know, I think that images can help convey the devastation. They can help convey the humanitarian situation. But how long can this go on?
We know that public opinion and indeed policy can be informed and changed by photographic imagery. I mean, you will remember that iconic image from the Vietnam War of the little naked girl running away from an explosion. Now, that girl became a woman and survived, which is, I suppose, the positive story out of it. But it certainly changed American opinion as to the conduct of that war.
Yeah, it changed American opinion, and I'm not sure where we are at in history that we have been witnessing the devastation and the mass sort of killing of people in Gaza for 22 months now, and there's no ceasefire. You know, I don't know what that means. Are we inured to images of death and destruction because we see it in real time? We see it daily, whether it's from Gaza, whether it's from Ukraine. I've been working for the past 3 years in Ukraine. And, you know, I just think, what does it take to move a human being into action at this point? You know, we see them on our phones, we see them on our computers, on TV. You know, I think that in one sense, we've become sort of anesthetized to them. And it's a very dangerous place to be.
Again, in recent days, we've been celebrating the anniversary of Live Aid, which was prompted by the Ethiopian famine. And we can all remember, those of us who live long enough, can remember those images of the starving children, which moved the world to do something about it. Now, you can argue over the effects of it long term on life in Ethiopia, but the point is that the world felt moved to do something about it. And
Absolutely.
Yet the world seems powerless to do something about what's happening to the children of Gaza.
Yeah, I, you know, it's something that sort of plagues me as a war photographer, as someone who has dedicated my entire adult life to covering humanitarian issues and conflict and human rights abuses, that I'm sitting outside watching this happen without any tools to be able to go in and document this. And I think, you know, it's horrific, the images we're seeing. And people can tell themselves whatever they need to tell themselves to get to turn a blind eye. You know, they can say, well, the people taking these photos are sympathetic to Hamas. Well, what does it matter? These are women and children dying of starvation in 2025. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter who took the photo in this scenario, because journalists are not allowed in. So someone has to take these images. And the fact is, the world needs to react at this point.
It's extraordinary that you can have an image, for example, of a dog being saved during the Texas floods, and that gets more traction than a child dying in Gaza.
Yeah, because it's easier to stomach. I mean, at the end of the day, people do not want to rise to the occasion, because everyone has their own issues and everyone has their own problems. But it is not, you know, it will be it will be incredibly devastating to look back 50 years from now, 20 years from now, 1 year from now, and say, we allowed this to happen. We watched. Where are the people in positions of power right now? Where is Donald Trump? It's where are the people who can stop this, who have the tools to stop it? You know, as an American, It is my tax dollars. It is Americans are supporting Israel to do what they're doing. And I want access to be able to cover this war because it's my tax dollars. So, you know, if nothing else, allow me as a journalist to go in and document what's happening, because I think the world needs to see. And I also think that world leaders need to step up now.
Lindsay Addario, award-winning photojournalist, author of the memoir, It's What I Do. Lindsay, thank you very much for joining us on the program.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.